Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida House votes to do away with Enterprise Florida and keep Visit Florida alive, barely.
What was promised at the press conference was not delivered.
Also tonight, we'll hear the latest on newly filed body camera bills that supporters say law enforcement agencies should get behind.
When you make a false accusation on one of our officers, you tarnish his reputation, his family's livelihood, and we cannot allow people to make false accusations and ruin their careers.
We'll also get a legislative week in review from our crack panel of reporters and sit down with the bureau chief of the Tampa Bay Times to get his insights on one of the more colorful and contentious legislative leaders in years. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the fourth and final day in the first week of the Florida 2017 lawmaking session. This is Capitol Report. House Speaker Richard Corcoran got his bills, and he also got enough Democrats to build a veto-proof majority. Nick Evans reports the House chamber has approved legislation to scale back Visit Florida and totally do away with Enterprise Florida.
The House and Senate have queued up and passed some of their highest-profile bills in the opening week of this year's session. In the House, that means a measure pruning Visit Florida's budget and placing significant new restrictions on the agency's spending. It also means a bill outright eliminating Enterprise Florida and a raft of other business incentive programs.
We know that the vast majority of the applicants that begin the process of receiving these incentives never complete them. Stated differently, those that do represent a tiny, small fraction. What was promised at the press conference was not delivered.
That's Paul Renner, a Palm Coast Republican sponsoring both measures. But the prime mover behind the bills is House Speaker Richard Corcoran. The Land O'Lakes Republican pulled the plug on Enterprise Florida funding last year, and he's been lining up these votes since at least December, when he went after Visit Florida for refusing to disclose details of a contract with the rapper Pitbull. But his crusade is raising the ire of Governor Rick Scott.
It's easy to throw out catchphrases like picking winners and losers and corporate welfare. By the way, I don't like either of those things. I doubt anybody in this chamber does. But that's not what we're doing. We are competing with 49 other states and hundreds of countries for jobs.
According to Politico Florida, Corcoran met with Democrats days ahead of the vote, hoping to pull enough members to his side for a veto-proof majority. Most Democrats rebuffed the speaker, but Friday, Orlando Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith spoke for the handful on the left who joined the Republican majority.
Much of these corporate incentives are essentially holding the state ransom for taxpayer money. And when we offer them these incentives back, it's like we're paying ransom money to these hostage takers.
Opposition in the Senate and the governor's mansion remains, but Corcoran's measure passed, and it passed strongly. Even if the speaker's priority eventually falters, his campaign to rein in state agency spending could lay the groundwork for an entirely different campaign in 2018. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
More on the sweeping agenda and unique political personality of Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran coming up at the end of tonight's Capitol Report. A body cameras bill is starting to move through the House and Senate, but as Sasha Cordner reports, some lawmakers want another measure to move forward that mandates officers use the cameras at all traffic stops, citing a high-profile South Florida death.
Since the October 2015 death of Corey Jones, there's been a lot of speculation over what happened. One thing no one disputes, he was shot multiple times by a plainclothes officer while on the side of the road. Benjamin Crump is a lawyer for Jones' family.
An unidentified, ununiformed, undercover police officer approached him at 3 in the morning while he was broke down on the side of the road on the phone with the tow company. and for inexplicable reasons, Corey Jones is dead.
While the officer, since identified as Newman Raja, maintained he told Jones he was a policeman, prosecutors released audio recordings of the roadside assistance call in January of this year that tell a different story. It starts off with Raja asking how Jones is doing and then suddenly telling him to put his hands up. Later, the roadside assistance operator on the phone with Jones can be heard as well after shots are fired.
Stop. I'm good. Y'all good? Yeah.
Oh my God.
County Jones, Corey's stepmother, says it's been very hard on the family.
Had body cameras been in place when our son was killed, we'd have answers right now to our granddaughters that are asking us, when is Uncle Corey coming home? Why can't Uncle Corey come home?
And following Jones' death, Palm Beach Gardens Police Department started using body cameras.
I applaud Palm Beach Gardens for doing that because they saw an issue and they resolved it. But what would have happened if they already had body cameras?
That's Lantana Democratic Representative Al Jaquette, who says he believes Corey Jones would probably still be alive today if body cameras had been in place at the time.
If that officer, who was not in uniform, an unmarked vehicle, who pulled up and did not identify his name, himself as a police officer, had he had a body camera on, I think he would have thought twice about the way that he approached Corey Jones. I think his training would have been in the back of his mind to show that, hey, I'm on camera. I need to make sure I observe the guidelines of my training.
Now, Jaquette is pursuing a bill that he says would not only help residents, but the officers as well. It requires law enforcement officers who do routine traffic stops to wear body cameras.
This bill protects them whose lives are in danger. Maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, they don't know who they're pulling over. Making sure that we are deterring any attack, any assault on our officers, and making sure we can clear their names as well. When you look at the statistics, that 53% of reports of excessive force, 53% less after those cameras were used. 93% of complaints against our officers, once those complainants found out that officer had a camera, they dropped their complaint. This is significant.
Jaquette hopes his House bill will get heard this year. Its Senate companion measure has a better chance of getting its first hearing since the Senate Criminal Justice Chairman is fellow Democrat Randolph Bracey. Both bills would draw opposition from law enforcement agencies since it's a mandate. Today, it's up to the agency if they want to have body cameras. Meanwhile, a body cameras bill that's already moving in the House and Senate is drawing concerns from some lawmakers. Supported by law enforcement groups, the bill allows officers to review their body camera footage before writing a report or making a statement. Matt Puckett is with the Florida Police Benevolent Association.
We live in a different world now, and officers make small mistakes. They approach from the right, but their report says they approach from the left, or the person that maybe the suspect or a witness, they get the color of the shirt wrong. Those little things trip up cases. They're technicalities in some cases, but they can really destroy a case.
But lawmakers like St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis have some concerns about what happens in high-profile incidents.
It's one thing if it's a minor traffic stop. I want to review. I'm concerned about this. It's another thing if it's a very serious act that occurs, and all of a sudden you get a replay in your recollection. Obviously, the other side doesn't get a replay in its recollection until it goes to trial.
The Senate bill's next stop is the Senate Judiciary Committee, a panel bill sponsor Greg Stube chairs. He says by the next stop, he hopes to work out those concerns. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
pointing to a need to end a perception of a revolving door, the Florida House today overwhelmingly passed a bill that would place new restrictions on lawmakers and statewide officials who want to become lobbyists. The House voted 110-3 to approve the measure, which has been part of a push by House Speaker Richard Corcoran to address ethics-related issues. Right now, lawmakers and statewide elected officials are barred from lobbying their former agencies for 2 years after leaving office. The bill would extend that prohibition to 6 years and make it apply to lobbying any state government body or agency. The dissenters today were Representative Loran Osley of Tallahassee, Representative Daisy Baez from Coral Gables, and Representative Wenge Newton of St. Petersburg, all Democrats. The bill would still have to pass the Senate before it could become law. Still to come on Capitol Report, our reporter panel looks back and ahead as we wrap up this first week of the legislative session.
But we're still seeing that idea of contention, you know, between the House floor and the Senate floor and what people are wanting.
And we'll get some insights into the personal and political personality of the Speaker of the Florida House from Tampa Bay Times Bureau Chief Steve Busquet.
There's this uncomfortable sense that a lot of people have in the Capitol that he's sort of one or two steps ahead of you strategically in terms of what he's doing.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
We wind up the first week of the 2017 Florida lawmaking session with our Capitol Report Reporters Roundtable. And we have Lynn Hatter and Regan McCarthy and Kate Payne with us. And we are going to go over some of the highlights of this first week of session. Lynn Hatter, lot of stuff going on when normally it's just look at the pretty flowers and we're all back together again and we'll start a little committee action and eventually we'll get into some real lawmaking. These guys jumped into it this week.
Oh yeah, and they jumped in hard. In fact, today you just saw the House follow through on one of its big promises, which was to kill Enterprise Florida and substantially whittle down Visit Florida. In fact, you heard that earlier in the show. That was a promise of House Speaker Richard Corcoran, and he's sticking to that.
All right. Regan McCarthy, from your angle, any big surprises here as lawmakers got together and kicked off the session?
I wouldn't say that we saw any big surprises. I think that a lot of the things that we did see are things that we expected leading up to the session. It is a session that's very different from previous sessions. As you said, a lot of sessions sort of start out slowly, you know, maybe a few priority bills move, but already in this session, you know, we're opening right up with a lot of contention. A lot of this difference between the House and the Senate and the governor's office, between what all three of those parties are pushing for. It's something we expected, something that we definitely saw signals we'd be seeing before session even started. And we're seeing all that play out now. And it is interesting to watch.
And as a little bit of a preview here, as we close out this edition of Capitol Report, a little bit later on this evening, we'll be talking with Steve Busquet, who is the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Tampa Bay Times. He did a absolutely stunning overview of Speaker Corcoran, and we'll talk to him about that to get some more insights on some of this contention and everything. Kate Payne.
Yes, so with these tensions, we are seeing that the possibility of a special session is hanging over lawmakers, especially freshman lawmakers are really considering that as they're making their way and trying to make a name for themselves. Democrats, especially in the House, are trying to join up with their Republican colleagues in order to get some of their own projects passed in the event that lawmakers cannot approve a budget on time. I spoke with one Miami Democrat, Nicholas Duran, and he said he's actually talking with his family about putting off that summer vacation a little longer, and we have a bite of that here.
I've sort of kind of started talking to my wife, my family, because I think they need to know a little bit about those sorts of things. But we have to play the cards as they lie.
That is a remarkable thing to hear talk of a special session after the first week of the regular session, Lynn Hatter.
Yeah, and Tom, you asked this question earlier, you know, were there any big surprises? I would actually say there was a really big surprise, and it came from Miami in the form of Senate Pro Tem Ana Terry Flores. She pretty much single-handedly tanked most of the major gun bills, and it seemed to have come from out of nowhere. And we actually have that bite as well, just to take a listen to it.
I do not support having guns on campus. I do not support having guns in airports. I don't support having guns in school zones. I don't support those things.
And so there you hear her quite frankly saying, you know, I'm not voting for any of these. And we followed up with her afterward and said, okay, well, Senator, what happened? You know, you were a former A-plus rated lawmaker, according to the National Rifle Association. And she said, hey, look, my district's changed. So have the people I represent. My position has changed with them. So that was really, really probably one of the biggest news items coming out this week. Senator Flores pretty much being the one to tank many of those gun proposals.
One of the things that had taken place in previous years following the action at the Capitol is that the committee week process that usually begins during a regular legislative session year, which is March and April, and begins back in December for committee weeks, is just getting some of your key legislation part of the way through the process. This year, much of it was teed up for floor action coming off of those committee weeks, Regan.
Yeah, we have already seen a lot of that, you know, getting right up into the House, getting ready to pass. But we're still seeing that idea of contention, you know, between the House floor and the Senate floor and what people are wanting. One area where we're noticing some of that contention is with a fracking ban. People were very excited this year to see the possibility of a fracking ban. It seemed to be moving forward in the House with Republican Senator Dana Young really pushing that. But now we're seeing a little bit of uncertainty as far as that's concerned. The House was pushing against that. They might be maybe angling for a kind of compromise now, possibly a moratorium. We have Representative Ray Rodriguez talking about that.
There's still a possibility that a bill using the basis of the Young bill, which includes a statewide preemption on oil and gas regulation and a moratorium or temporary ban on the subject of unconventional oil extraction, is definitely a possibility.
So you can hear there, he's ready for maybe a little wiggle room. It's something environmentalists say they're not exactly down with. They really would rather have that ban, that something solid in place. They're worried that a moratorium doesn't provide the protections that are needed, but that might be the direction that the session is going in this time.
Kate Payne, you talked about some of the things that may not happen, which would drive this session into overtime. What things that you have been following are perhaps more likely to happen?
Well, something we did see this afternoon was a real fix for the death penalty. Florida's death penalty statutes have been under a lot of pressure in the past couple of years, struck down by both the United States Supreme Court and the Florida Supreme Court. Today we saw that both the House and the Senate have agreed on a fix, and so that would require unanimous jury decisions in order to sentence someone to death in the state of Florida. That will be the first bill that both chambers have agreed on and sent to the governor's office. If he signs it, then the state can start moving forward with dozens of death penalty cases that have been on hold.
So much for week one of session. Looking ahead to week two, let's do a quick round the table. Lynn Hatter.
Yeah, so we have a bill coming up next week regarding sanctuary cities. That's a big issue. This would actually prevent Florida cities from adopting sanctuary policies as part of that big immigration debate. And that one's going to be hitting the legislative chambers come Monday.
Something to look forward to. Regan McCarthy.
I think we'll be seeing some more talks about water quality. We saw some big changes in a Senate bill coming up here where it changed from maybe just a land buy plan to a plan that included some more water quality projects. And that's got the environmentalists a little concerned. So we'll be watching what happens with that.
And we wind up with Kate Payne.
Yeah, so something interesting that happened this week was about community redevelopment agencies. So the House is really looking at gutting those agencies. And so that's sort of a cooperative between local governments to try and redevelop blighted neighborhoods. And the House lawmakers are really thinking of taking all of their funding away. House lawmakers are considering putting an end to those agencies, not allowing them to enter any new projects after October 2017. Some lawmakers agree that these agencies need more transparency and more oversight, similar to local governments, but that seems a bit strong to put an end to them right away. So we'll be watching that in the coming weeks.
So much to look forward to as we embark on week two of the legislative session, and we'll be following it with Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Legislation filed at the state capitol aims to help businesses comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act, while at the same time attempting to stop lawsuits being filed against businesses that may be out of compliance with the act. The bill would allow businesses to contract with an ADA compliance expert to inspect the site to make sure it meets current standards. Those found out of compliance would be given a chance to fix issues that could be found. Bill supporters say some attorneys have created a cottage industry of finding minor ADA violations, such as improper signage or ramps that aren't 100% to code at a given business, and then suing that firm without ever asking them to comply. According to supporters of the measure, attorneys will find a disabled person to file a lawsuit on behalf of and then give that individual just a fraction of an out-of-court settlement, which can often reach $5,000 to $10,000. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, through the magic of radio, let's leave the comfortable confines of the studio and pop down to the Florida Capitol for a relaxing cup of coffee. We are in the 10th floor coffee shop of the Capitol building in Tallahassee on this fourth day of the opening week of the 2017 legislative session, and the Capitol Bureau Chief of the Tampa Bay Times, Steve Bosquet, here with us. Steve, for the benefit of listeners who perhaps have not seen the fantastic profile piece that the Tampa Bay Times ran this past weekend that you did on House Speaker Richard Corcoran, you spoke with the Speaker extensively, visiting him at his home in Pasco County and trying to get some kind of grasp on how the personal will drive the political during this legislative session. Just top line it, what did you find out about the Speaker?
He's a guy with very strong convictions. He's a guy with a significant amount of ambition, I think. And he's a unique person in the 30 or so years I've covered the legislature, because he was a backroom political operative before he became an elected official. In fact, as the story pointed out, the most difficult thing for Richard Corcoran was getting elected to public office. He failed miserably twice and finally got elected on the third try. So, you know, Rick Scott's running around calling Corcoran a career politician. He's been in office the same amount of time Rick Scott has been. But the difference is Corcoran is a strategist. Corcoran thinks like the campaign manager. And so everything he does is strategic. There's this uncomfortable sense that a lot of people have in the Capitol that he's sort of one or two steps ahead of you strategically in terms of what he's doing. So he's a challenging person to cover for that reason.
The other thing that is very much a part of this gentleman's makeup is a complete ability to not care who he angers. And if we remember 2 years ago, when as the budget chief of the House, he brought the entire session crashing down. This year, he has opposed the governor's economic development incentives with Enterprise Florida, Visit Florida, all that sort of thing. Now he's going after university foundations, which I suppose is not a big hit with the president of the Senate. Right. Is that part of his strategy too, that he really doesn't care who he takes off?
Yeah, but I think it's more than a strategy. I think it's what he really believes. Everybody in the legislative process is posturing on some level. I mean, let's get real here. You know, everybody. In Corcoran's case, he's been a product of the political system that he's now sort of trying to tear down in the eyes of a lot of people. But he sees all around him things he doesn't like. He's always been kind of a renegade. He has been in the system, but has been trying to change the system. You want to look at a blueprint for something Richard Corcoran did, dust off that book that had Marco Rubio's name on it, The 100 Innovative Ideas. That's filled with the Richard Corcoran philosophy of things like getting rid of property taxes. I mean, revolutionary stuff, privatizing the issuance of driver licenses in the state. I think if I had to distill down to one thought that profile of Corcoran, and it was said to me by a number of people, which is that Corcoran is concerned about his legacy and doesn't want to be just another portrait on the wall in the Capitol. And like, who was that guy? They're going to remember Richard Corcoran long after he's gone.
And you've also got him sort of teeing up a human legacy in the way that future speakers may be lining up. How does he get his policies and his priorities to survive him in the House?
In a term limit culture that we're in right now, the door is revolving very quickly. You're in and you're out in short order. That's especially true in the House because House members move up to the Senate to extend their career by 8 or 10 years. But you're not in the House very long. Corcoran knows that. Day of the Associated Press planning meeting, and that gives us a great insight as to how Corcoran thinks. He gets up and he says something along the lines of, well, it's day 39. He's counting the days that he's speaker, and every day that he doesn't do something that he thinks is revolutionary or long-lasting is a day lost.
Finally, Steve, the speaker's adversarial nature, does that permanently change the landscape of these two chambers that now you no longer feel compelled to, at least in public, praise your political opponents? Now we can go after them, kind of like what's going on the national level?
Yeah, I think we're moving into uncharted territory, and I say that because to show that he's a principled conservative, there's going to be some issue that Corcoran's going to draw a line in the sand and he's not going to compromise on. An issue is going to rise to the fore that Corcoran will say to the Senate, Joe, I've got to have this. And if you want your Lake Okeechobee relief money or you want your higher education money, I've got to have this, period, the end. Everyone who's followed the legislature knows that over the arc of time, the two presiding officers basically horse trade on a few big items. The difference with Corcoran is he's doing a lot of cutting-edge public policy stuff. I have no doubt that he's got a half dozen things up his sleeve that Rick Scott's not going to like. In my 30 years here, I've never seen a governor run mail pieces and run videos and robocalls against a presiding officer in his own party. That is wild stuff. But it shows you how politics is evolving and changing in the modern age.
Your insights is always so greatly appreciated. Steve Busquet, the Bureau Chief of the Tampa Bay Times here in Florida's capital city. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.